This is the BBC.
Hello, I'm Carolyn Quinn. Thank you for downloading this edition of the Westminster Hour for Sunday, the 1st of October. The Tory party faithful are gathered together in Manchester. The Prime Minister wants to reassert her authority and convince people she's in it for the long term. But will that strategy work? Can Theresa May really lead this party into the next election? And how undermined has she been by her Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson's repeated interventions? Should she sack him? There's a list of questions for you, and we've got a great panel to answer them. Nicky Morgan, former Education Secretary. She left government when Theresa May became Prime Minister, but was recently elected to one of the most prestigious, influential roles at Westminster, chairing the Treasury Select Committee. Nicky is the MP for Loughborough and recently warned her party that most people in the non-Westminster bubble are heartily sick of Brexit. I think we're still going to hear quite a lot about it this week.
I think we are, yes.
I don't know if Tim Lawton agrees with Nicky about that. I think you probably
agree. Well, we agree on much. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The Brexit, yes. Possibly not
conference
so much.
Conference agreement, yeah.
He represents East Worthing and Shoreham on the south coast and is a former children's minister. Aisha Hazarika's career has seen her move between being a Labour spin doctor and speechwriter to stand-up comedian and now columnist on George Osborne's London Evening Standard.
And we live in strange times.
We do. And I have to say, apart from appearing on the Westminster Hour, it's lovely to have you here. What on earth are you doing at a Conservative Party conference?
Well, now that I'm a political commentator, I've been invited to other conferences. So I was actually chairing a panel today as part of Bright Blue. It was very interesting. Although I've just come from the Labour Party conference and I got more grief from a man called Jeremy today in my fringe than I did at Labour last week. I did actually have to say to him, I get a lot of trouble with men called Jeremy. So come on, give me a break.
But at least you're not in your editor's fringe there anyway.
Oh, well, that's true, yes. And do you notice a change of tone? Is the atmosphere different between the two?
Completely different. I mean, there were so many young people at the Labour Party conference. And also, it was absolutely jam-packed. You literally couldn't move anywhere. And this has just got a very different vibe to it. It's definitely, I hate to say it, it's a bit older.
Mature. It's less sweaty.
It's mature. It's not as an ethnically diverse. A lot of men. Seen a lot of men around. Lots of suits. But just very, very different atmosphere. But very interesting. More corporate. Much more corporate.
The very sweaty comment came there from Sam Coates.
Fully deodorised.
Doyen
really?
Of the...
Doesn't goodness. Smell that way, Sam.
We're in a very confined space. Yeah.
It's quite pungent.
Well, Deputy Political Editor at the Times, and you'll be guiding us through what's sure to be an eventful week. And we know what Theresa May wants. She wants this Conservative Party conference to be all about. The banners are up all around the conference centre here in Manchester. Slogans recalling the themes of her very first speech in Downing Street as Prime Minister. It really was just over a year ago. And this is how she summed it up to Andrew Marr on BBC One this morning.
It's a real opportunity to show the mission of this government, which was the mission that I set out when I became Prime Minister, standing on the steps of No. 10 Downing Street, which is a government that focuses on the needs of ordinary working people and a government that really does build a country that works for everyone. And you'll see in some of the announcements we've made today about student finance and housing, we've also listened to the message that came from that election.
Well, that's her mission. We'd already been told about those shiny new policy announcements, plans to soften the impact of student tuition fees and review the system and more help for young people to get on the housing ladder. And we'll hear more about that domestic agenda later in this hour. But of course, the big question is, will Theresa May last long enough to put these and other policies to the test in the next election? Not, according to former party chairman Grant Shapps, she won't. Will she still be leader by the time of the election?
I don't think so. 2022 is a long time away in politics, as well as in life. And I actually think, when you get something that catastrophically wrong in any walk of life, there's usually a price to pay. And that price is usually, falling on your sword.
Well, Nicky Morgan, what do you think? I mean, do you think she's the right person to lead you into the election?
Well, I've been on record as saying I think it's going to be very difficult for her to do that in light of the result that we had in June this year. And the Conservative Party sets pretty high bars for its leaders. And when things fall short, they know when changes need to be made. And I think, look, the fact that you've got someone like Grant saying what he said on record just shows what extraordinary times we live in.
Mm. She says she wants to stay in it for the long term, although initially she said to the 1922 Committee of Backbenchers, I'll stay as long as you want. Do you think that she's going to be proved horribly wrong in that assertion then? It sounds like it.
Well, I'm sure that she does want to stay because Theresa May is a person who believes in public duty, and she would see it very much her duty as leader of the current of the party to take us into an election, to plan for that and to be ready for every eventuality. I think the question is whether events are going to overtake her and probably the wider party, because we know that in 2019 we are going to be leaving the European Union. There's going to be some kind of withdrawal, whether, you know, I hope it's an agreement, but it's possible that there might not be. And I think that's a sort of break in this parliament that's going to affect not just the Conservative Party, it's going to affect the Labour Party too, because their position still on this is very, very unclear.
And Tim Lawton, a lot of people are looking to that 2019 point and thinking that that probably realistically is the moment for Theresa May to bow out. I mean, what do you think when you hear people describing her as a wounded antelope, you know, limping through this conference?
Well, that's all good headlines for the media, but the most important thing
I think it was some Conservative delegates, representatives.
Unhelpfully providing good headlines for the media. I don't know who's going to be the leader of the Conservative Party at the next election. 5 years, as Grant Shapps said, is a long time. 5 years ago, who would ever have thought that Jeremy Corbyn would be anywhere near the front bench of the Labour Party? So anything could happen. I agree with Nikki. I mean, Theresa and I came into Parliament at the same time as Theresa, 20 years ago now. She does have a sense of duty, and she did actually say and fessed up to the fact that, look, I got us into this mess, so I'm going to get us out. And I believe that. I mean, somebody else could have just run away from it all and said, blow that, we messed up, I'm going to leave somebody else.
Do you think she's the right person?
Do you want her? As her predecessor did.
Do you want her to lead you into the next election?
I don't know, frankly. What I do know is that we need to have a government which is getting on with the job, the most important issue at the moment, which is negotiating Brexit. She is the Prime Minister. She has picked up the reins after an election that didn't go the way we wanted. And we need those negotiations to come to fruition. After that, all bets are off. And I think if it weren't for Brexit, then the Tory party is quite savage in dealing with leaders who trip up. We've done it in the past. But at the moment, absolutely in the interest of the country, we have got to have some stability and consistency in government and leadership whilst we go through Brexit.
Nikki?
Well, I mean, I agree with Tim in terms of we need stability and certainty. But it's interesting because we think here that the most important issue is Brexit. And you're right, we're going to be discussing it this week. Actually, the country doesn't. You only have to look at the recent Lord Ashcroft polling, which set out very clearly that the Brexit is important to the Conservatives. It's important, obviously, to the country, but actually for ordinary people out there. They're wanting to hear this conference talking about education standards, about health funding. We do need to return to the thorny issue of social care. That is what our leader, you know, Theresa May, I think she's here for, you know, a good long while yet. Mm. That's what she needs to be pulling the team together to talk about this week.
All right. Aisha, you're listening to this now. What do you think?
Well, I think the interesting thing for me coming up this week is just seeing how much, you know, how divided the Conservative Party is. I mean, Manchester hasn't seen this much disunity since, you know, Noel Gallagher refused to join Liam on stage for the One Love concert. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is not a harmonious sort of conference. And when you speak to people in every fringe and all the meetings, everyone is stuck in this really unsatisfactory position. Theresa May is clearly having a nightmare. She is too weak to, you know, sack her naughty ministers like Boris Johnson, yet you guys haven't really got any alternative because you need her to see Brexit through. So you're in this kind of weird political purgatory for a while.
And Sam Coates, what are you hearing? You know, we hear there she hasn't got the strength or the authority to sack cabinet members. There is one big blonde elephant in the room, isn't there? The vulture in the nest, shall we call him? Boris Johnson, he made one of his now regular interventions on the eve of a big moment for the Prime Minister. And she laughed nervously when she was asked this morning if he was unsackable. What are you hearing?
Well, as you press your nose up to the glass of the Conservative Party at this conference, it makes for pretty uncomfortable watching. And I have to say, a little bit of me feels a tiny bit sorry for Theresa May, but not very much of me. And that's because going into this conference, she really faces three challenges. She's got a cabinet with a basically unbridgeable divide on Brexit. And I can't see how we're going to get across that with that cabinet composition. We've got a parliamentary party that does not command a majority in the House of Commons, which is going to wreck any attempt for her to reset her premiership and try and suggest she have some kind of social agenda going forward. And we also have her. She is a person of variable public quality. Some days she's okay, some days she's not so good. This morning on the telly, she was kind of not so good. And we've got a situation where the party isn't entirely certain how long it's going to last. And we've got this great big blonde problem coming down the track in the shape of Boris Johnson, who has twice in the last 2 weeks tested her, said things that, whilst not breaching cabinet collective cabinet positions, try to bind her hands in the way the cabinet debate over Brexit should go. And she's being asked, should you sack her? And I think what I heard this morning, was her being asked on the telly by Andrew Marr, is Boris Johnson unsackable? And her replying, I want to see a country that works for everyone. That kind of reply undermines her credibility in the eyes of her colleagues. And people are worried. I'm going to give you one quote from a minister who is worried about the fact that her authority is draining through the regular challenges by Boris Johnson. They said to me, I think we are heading for the end game for Theresa May. She needs to sack Boris or stand down. His every utterance is calculated to damage her. It cannot go on. That's the kind of thing I'm hearing.
Well, hold that thought, because a senior member of this party, Graham Brady, he's the chairman of the backbench 1922 committee. He's sometimes referred to as the Tory backbenchers' shop steward. I asked him about this when I met him outside in the exhibition area. He says the party is united on one thing at least.
Nobody is thinking about a leadership election. Nobody thinks this would be an intelligent time for the Conservative Party to look inwards and have that sort of internal squabble going on. Our job is to get on with the task of government.
So what's your message to Boris Johnson then?
I think that all Conservatives, all members of the government and all backbenchers, we have a common task that we share. We need to pull together and make sure that we are delivering for the country. I don't think there is a demand in the parliamentary Conservative Party for a debate about the future leadership of the party.
As long as the Prime Minister's authority is being challenged, as it is, and she seemed to be being undermined by her own cabinet. I mean, Sajid Javid said that he ran out of time during a newspaper interview to be able to back her fully and say he supported her leadership through to the next election. As long as you've got moments like that, how can you show that you're a united party?
I think that in a political party, I think what you need is self-discipline. Everybody needs to understand that when we are having our party conference, we are being judged by the country. And one of the main things that they're looking for is the ability of the party to recognise the things that are most important and the things that are least important. And I heard Theresa May say this morning in her speech to the National Convention that one of the least important things to most British people is who's doing what job at what time. What they want is to hear about the policies that are going to help their lives. They're going to make it that they're more secure in the access to good healthcare, that they're going to be more confident of having good schools for their children, that their children are going to be able to have at least as much opportunity in life as they've had. These are the messages we need to be getting out, and that's what all of us should be concentrating on.
And while that sort of speculation goes on, while there are questions about Theresa May's authority, doesn't that hamper the Brexit negotiators as well? Doesn't it have an impact on how Britain is viewed and how the government is viewed and the Prime Minister is viewed?
I'm very clear about this. I think we have a very simple, straightforward task at this conference, and it's to demonstrate that we are a grown-up party which cares more about the future of our country than about the particular career prospects of any individual. I think that message is coming very clearly from Theresa May, and it's a message that I would like to come across very clearly from the conference as a whole.
Graham Brady very diplomatically telling Boris Johnson and his career prospects to keep shtum a bit. Nikki, do you think Boris Johnson should be sacked for saying what he said?
Well, I think obviously he hasn't been so far, and I think that Graham actually speaks for the parliamentary party, which is that if he can't sort of keep stum about his own views, if he can't give up the oxygen of publicity, because he'll be delighted by the fact that everybody's talking about him now, if he can't stop setting down arbitrary red lines, then yes, he has to go. And the Chief Whip or the Prime Minister has to deliver that message. I don't think we can be clearer. You know, if Boris or his acolytes are listening now, the Parliamentary Party has had enough. And actually, it is now time for everybody to get back on track to deliver the issues that Graham was talking about, that I've just been talking about, that the conference wants to talk about, that the party members want to talk about. And I think the country wants to hear from us. So, you know, Boris has basically got, I suspect, a matter of days in which to show, he's giving a speech on Tuesday, I think, that he gets the message and that actually he's going to accept ministerial collective responsibility.
Tim Lawton, why do you think she hasn't sacked him so far? Because Nikki says he's got one more chance, but I mean, he's had one more chance several times, hasn't he?
Yes, and frankly, I was on the same side of the argument as Boris, and I work with Boris on the Leave side. But I think saying the things he's saying at the moment isn't helpful for the country and for Brexit and for the government. I mean, Boris is Boris, but when you are a senior member of the government in cabinet, then there is cabinet responsibility, and that should be absolutely the case now when we are dealing not with other political parties in this country, but we're actually dealing with other countries as part of the Brexit negotiations. And there have been lots of unhelpful things coming out from the Labour Party, who changes its view on Brexit every week, from the Liberal Democrats, who think we should have a second referendum, giving comfort to some of the people on the other side in the EU who think actually that Brexit may not happen. So, and frankly, if you've got the government that's responsible for leading on these negotiations, occasionally sending a mixed message, that is not helpful for the negotiations and the people doing those negotiations. And I think Boris just needs to bear that in mind.
Are you saying he's an embarrassment as Foreign Secretary?
No, I'm not saying he's an embarrassment. I mean, he's liked
around the world.
He needs
to watch what he
says,
then, if he's contradicting the Prime Minister on the
He, no differently
stage.
From any other member of the Cabinet or of the government, needs to toe a line. And that's a particularly sensitive line that needs to be towed at the moment.
So
when we are dealing
him?
With very sensitive negotiations.
Do you think she should sack him?
That's not a decision for me to make, but I hope he does not continue to make some of the slightly uncautious comments and unhelpful comments that he's made. I don't disagree with some of the things he's necessarily said, but he doesn't actually need to say them.
Sam Coates, he's helped out, we hear, with a Channel 4 documentary that's going out at this moment.
We're missing
it. People will have to catch it afterwards because they'll be listening to the Westminster Hour.
Well, we can tell you what's on it. And in this documentary, we find out that Boris Johnson has been telling friends that Theresa May probably doesn't have more than a year, that before the election she was a victim of the modern slavery of those two advisers that had to go at the election, and that she looks a shrunken figure since the election. Not the kind of message that you want to hear.
So this is all quite helpful stuff.
I think yet more eyebrows. The eyebrows that weren't raised are fully raised now. But listen, I think that it's quite easy for members of the Conservative Parliamentary Party to put down one more red line, say he's got one more chance, tell him to get back in his box, threaten to sack him. I think that the reality that Downing Street knows and the Whip's office knows is that Boris on the back benches is not an easy prospect for them to savour. He came top of a poll of Conservative activists in terms of who should be the next leader. He will accuse Theresa May, if he's sent to the backbenches as a Brexit martyr, of betraying Brexit. And that is a siren voice that I bet you will be heeded by plenty of Brexiteers around the place. So there'll be a great deal of heat and light the moment that he's sacked, but he will make some arguments around the transition, around the final kind of deal, to try and pull the arguments in his direction, and people will listen. And that risks, rather than him being in the Foreign Office, where he's going to concentrate on foreign affairs, him dragging the back Brexit debate in a direction Theresa May doesn't want to take it. That is dangerous, and it provides more uncertainty than keeping him where he is. So I think it's easy to put down these red lines, but less good if you're actually sitting in Downing Street wondering what to do.
And certainly some figures, senior figures, have said to me that, you know, you've got to bear in mind always the fragile majority propped up by the DUP.
He's a popular figure.
And danger of somebody like him going to the front bench, back benches.
Exactly.
Aisha?
Well, I think this is all stems from the fact that Boris has had a Brexistential crisis of late, because he's not like down and dirty with the Brexit negotiations. He was a big part of the Leave campaign. And also, you know, he's got Jacob Rees-Mogg snapping on his heels as the new young prince that could be a contender one day down the track. So I think his interventions are sort of, look at me, I'm still here. The blonde bombshell is still in business, everyone. And, you know, I do think Theresa May is an incredibly difficult bind. And Sam is right. He would be, you know, a terrible march on the back benches. But if I were her, I would actually call his bluff and I would do it. And I think, actually, there was a survey of Conservative Association chairmen, and only, like, less than one in three actually supported him and thought that he'd actually been behaving quite badly.
Do you think he would have a coterie on the back benches, Nicky Morgan, who would support him and, you know, go for a leadership challenge?
Well, I think he clearly has his supporters, and there are MPs who are his friends.
You're shaking your head, Tim.
But the answer is I don't actually think this is... I see what Sam is saying, and I'm sure that's the calculation that's being made in Downing Street and the Whip's office. But there comes a point when actually somebody has driven a coach and horses through collective responsibility. I actually think, and I write for Conservative Home, for full disclosure, but I don't think their surveys are representative, actually, of party members. Very self-selecting.
Ours was a YouGov survey of people. It's a completely different.
No, that's right. But there was a thing about Conservative members say this because they replied to a Con Home survey. And yes. I was talking about something a good deal
more scientific.
Yeah, good. I'm very... But we cannot be beholden to Boris or to people who are going to shout betrayal, because actually this is a huge issue. We've got to deliver the right deal for the country. It's important for decades to come. Frankly, if we have leadership which allows itself to continue to be undermined, stops it actually focusing on the negotiations, then actually that's the wrong decision we made for the country, even if it's the right thing to keep some people happy on backbenches for a few weeks.
And the Tory party is very big on loyalty and actually hates people rocking the, why you laugh. Actually, people who are completely disloyal to the leadership and undermine the chances of the Conservative Party and the standing in the country are not liked within the Conservative Party membership. However big the beast, blonde, vulture or elephant-like, however you want to call them. The backbenchers in the Tory party at the moment are remarkably united. After the shock of that election, there are lots of angry people there. There are lots of people still coming to terms with it. But absolutely, we know that we need to work together, work with the leadership and the government that we've
got. So you're saying he wouldn't have an embrace, a big team waiting for him on the backbench?
There is no appetite. As Graham absolutely said, quite right, and that's why he's the chairman of the 22 committee, there is no leadership manoeuvring going on at the moment. Nobody wants it for the foreseeable future, absolutely. And anybody who tries to stir it up from the front benches or from the back benches will get fairly short shrift from the vast majority of our colleagues and the vast majority of our membership, frankly.
Can I just ask you briefly, quickly, Nicky, the idea of a no-deal scenario when it comes to the Brexit negotiations. Mm. Theresa May was asked about that this morning, if she'd resign if she didn't manage to get a deal. She said, I'm working hard to get a deal. But she did acknowledge that the government's working on what might happen. Are you prepared to contemplate a no-deal scenario?
Well, I mean, I think Theresa May was right in the sense that the government has to prepare for every eventuality. But everything I've ever heard her say, whether this morning, privately, publicly before, is that she wants there to be a deal. And I think that's right. She would know that actually the difficulty of appearing in the House of Commons to say, I can't get a deal, folks, this is where we are in the negotiations, would be, you know, she thinks now is hard. Imagine what that's going to be like in 18 months' time. I think it would be, and I personally think that I've never agreed with the no deal is better than a bad deal. And obviously we don't want a bad deal. We want a deal in which both sides are grown up enough to agree, give and take, compromise, get out, get on with a post Brexit future.
Very brief word from you, Tim.
Of course, a deal is better than not having no deal. But this is where David Cameron got it wrong. He went to the negotiations. Absolutely, his bottom line was, well, we're not coming out. So he, in the end, accepted anything. We absolutely have to be clear that we are not prepared to take anything that is thrown at us. And frankly, I think grown-ups, the politicians, business leaders in Germany above all, they fear no deal above anything else, and common sense will prevail. But if you go in saying, well, here are all our cards and we're going to do a deal, whatever the cost, of course you're not going to get the best possible deal. So we must reserve that as a possibility and be clear that it is a nuclear option.
Well, Sam Coates, let's look ahead to some of the events coming up this week in Manchester. Boris Johnson's making his speech on Tuesday. Tomorrow, though, we have the Chancellor, Philip Hammond. We've got David Gawke, the Work and Pensions Secretary. And, of course, he's got a big issue. There have been plenty of complaints about the wider national rollout of universal credit. It's due next month. Do you think he might say something about that tomorrow?
So universal credit is one of those sagas that's been going on for the 7 years since the Tories entered Downing Street. This big, big reform, rolling seven benefits into one, requiring very complicated IT in order to make it work for people. It is currently being rolled out after lots of years of delays to people, and people are experiencing it for the first time. And what we are seeing is complaint in some parts of the country, but not others, from citizens and advice bureaus and lawyers, that people who have to go onto this system find themselves enduring a very rapid shock. You can end up having up to 6 weeks without any cash, and that is throwing people into a complete crisis. People are ending up being kicked out of their homes, they're going bankrupt, and this six-week period is causing a big problem. There is a Tory revolt. We're waiting for David Gawke to say something tomorrow, but we don't expect him to say something particularly transformative or to pause the scheme, merely to suggest that there are some minor tweaks around the side to make sure people get emergency
money. Oh, well, that's interesting, because when I did an interview with Dame Louise Casey, the former head of the government's Troubled Families team, on Friday, she was warning of the impact that the universal credit changes could have.
I think they should pause on it, as simple as that. That, you know, I don't say that lightly, but the fact of the matter is, the actual delivery of it means that some people, because of the waiting time before benefit kicks in, will end up in dire circumstances, more dire than I think we've seen in this country for years, and that we have to stop.
Well, 12 Conservative backbenchers are said to have written to David Gawke asking him to pause the rollout. There you have Dame Louise Casey saying, pause it, think again. Nicky Morgan, do you think that there should be a pause?
Well, whether there's an overall pause or whether there is just a slower rollout, which is what David Gawke has potentially indicated, which is he has been very clear to a number of us that there wouldn't be this mass rollout if there were problems that were being identified. Clearly, this is a big problem. I know that colleagues have written a letter. I know that David will listen, because nobody wants to end up in a situation that Dame Louise Casey has outlined, where people are, because it's overall the right policy to do, to bring those benefits together, to make it worthwhile for people to accept, whether it's a few extra hours at work or to do the right thing. But being without money for 6 weeks is, for most of us, not an option. We would not want to put people through that. And I'm absolutely sure that David Gawke has realised that.
She and others are not saying, they're saying the principle is good, but it's the implementation. Mm. So, Tim Lawton, if he doesn't really address these concerns, people like Heidi Allen and others who've signed this letter are going to raise even more complaints, aren't they?
Yeah, let's not lose sight of the wood for the trees here. I mean, this is a big project, huge project. It was IDS's darling. It's taken 7 years, and we have had some pilot errors within that time. This is not something that's appeared out of nowhere, and a lot of changes and finesses to the system have been made as a result of that. So it's good that it should go ahead. It's going to simplify the system. It's going to save money. It's in the interest of many people who are on complicated benefits at the moment. If there is this timing problem that is likely to have a big impact, then I think the government needs to and will be sensible and sensitive to how we might iron out what is a technical issue. It's a big issue if you've got a cash flow problem and you rely entirely on that.
Nicky said, if you haven't got any money for 6 weeks while you wait, I mean, that's a dire situation.
No, absolutely. But there are parts of the system that should be able to address that, those people who find themselves in that situation. So we've absolutely got to get this right, but we've been trying to get it right right, for 7 years. And at some stage, this has got to be rolled out properly.
Are you sure?
Well, I think the optics of this could look terrible for the Conservative Party. Anyone who has seen that film, I, Daniel Blake, knows how, you know, fragile and vulnerable people are who really rely on their benefits. And even just a couple of weeks having no money can really be the difference between quite chaotic lives absolutely spiralling out of control. Not only are there problems from the 12 Conservative MPs, big problem in Scotland as well, because of, it affects different regions. And even the DUP are worried about how this is going to affect Northern Ireland. So they may well not be able to get this through Parliament. But I think, you know, Theresa May is trying to get back on this domestic agenda. I completely agree with Nikki. Bread and butter issues are domestic issues for people. And if the Conservative Party blunder into this, having had lots of warnings, I think it will play out very badly.
So, Sam, you're not hearing necessarily that there will be a pause, but there may be some sort of tinkering at the edges when David Gawke makes his speech tomorrow. Have I read that right?
What it sounds like, and we have to wait to see what he says, is that David Cork believes that there is a system in place so that people can get immediate emergency money, cash, straight away transferred on the day to their bank accounts if there is, as it were, a systems problem. And he hopes that that will sort of cauterise the immediate problem. But there are two or three big things. The six-week problem is one massive existential problem for this system. But there is also the fact that this is a money-saving exercise. The moving from six individual benefits to universal credit saves the Treasury money. That's why they like it, but that will be painful. And then you have, finally, the warnings from the people inside the Department for Work and Pensions about how this system was put together. They were made clear that the Secretary of State, Ian Duncan Smith, did not want to hear bad news. So the DWP hid the bad news about the implementation of this system. And civil servants are on record, named civil servants, saying that is what we were expected to do and that is what we did. So if there are problems, it's because of the way it was managed by politicians all the way through the last 7 years.
Well, David Gawke speaks tomorrow, as I say, his first big conference speech in his new role. Before him comes the Chancellor, Philip Hammond. More widely, do you think there's going to be more attention on the fringes than on what's said on the conference floor? Do you think there will be lots of policies unveiled this week on the conference floor?
So Philip Hammond is going to give his speech tomorrow. Normally that's a big moment for the Chancellor. We have something like 80 minutes until the embargo is lifted on what he's going to say. I'm going to give you one spoiler. It's not terribly exciting. There's going to be some cash.
You are kidding me.
There's going to be some cash for places in the north that he thinks will power that part of the country. I don't think it's going to be revolutionary. He's also going to mount yet another defence of capitalism and the ability to get rich if you're an entrepreneur. That might work, it might not work. I mean, I think we are looking to the fringes for a bit more engaging content, because if that's the standard of what we get from the podium, then that's not going to make the newspapers. And I think that there is a debate. There is a really interesting existential debate for the Conservative Party about the economy and capitalism. And that's what I want to hear this week at the Conservative Conference. 80% of people say that they now support nationalising some of the key utilities and railways. People are more likely to incline to support socialism than capitalism because they think it's greedy. This is a big challenge for the Tory party, and repeating slogans about the importance of profit and capitalism ain't going to bring round the country. How they manage that debate will determine the Conservative Party's long-term future.
I definitely agree with Sam. And actually, I think, you know, Theresa May's just about managing speech on the steps of Downing Street, which actually quite scared people in the Labour Party, because it was like, this is almost coming onto our territory. This is a really important issue, responsible capitalism, all of this type of thing. And actually, if the Conservatives got any sense, they should be trying to get back onto that agenda. The idea that you are going to be tone deaf to the country, which is worried about inequality, which is feeling the economy is not working for them. The idea that you're going to be having barnstorming speeches about how to get more wealthy if you're at the top is not going to cut the mustard.
Well, funnily enough, I was thinking about that just earlier today as I wandered around the conference. It does seem pretty clear that Theresa May desperately wants to move the focus away from the divisive issue of Brexit and onto the domestic agenda, examining the entrails of the election result, and there's been a review that's going to feed into attempts to woo voters away from Labour with practical policies. It's also calling for the re-establishment of a party youth movement and establishing a 10-year so-called outreach programme to ethnic minority voters. But is that enough to show that this is more than just the same old rhetoric? You don't have to go too far in this place before you find people willing to share their ideas. At the entrance to the conference hall, a juice bar's offering a tempting list of choices. Fallen fruits, berry geek, and the ultimate detox. But what can Theresa May do to detoxify her fractious party to try to make amends after losing her majority at the election? Ben Page is chief executive of the polling company Ipsos Mori.
The ultimate challenge they face is that everybody under 44 didn't vote for them, pretty much. I mean, the country is split by age, and it's split by optimism. And I think this is the central challenge, that young people do not now expect to be better off than their parents. And this is something that has accelerated since the crash. But it means that all of those promises that you can have a house, you can have a job, you can have a career, your aspirations, etc., those just aren't cutting through. People don't believe it anymore. And so that's when, of course, messages of the sort of Jeremy Corbyn, the system is broken, you know, capitalism is in crisis, start to have a bit more traction, or at least anything as an alternative.
Conservatives can't ignore what happened in the election, though many here long to turn the clock back to wipe out the pain of June the 8th. The conference slogan here is building a country that works for everyone, a line that Theresa May used on the steps of Downing Street when she became Prime Minister in 2016, and things looked oh so different. Her former Director of Communications, Katy Perrier, strongly advises Theresa May to show this week that she means it.
When she was 24 points ahead in the polls, it was because people believed in her and that domestic agenda. And she needs to keep on going back to that and show that she's worth more than a Brexit legacy and a failed election campaign. She deserves more than that, actually. She does deserve to deliver on issues like mental health, racial disparity, you know, making sure that people feel that this is a country they can live in the future and that public services won't discriminate against them. And also, you know, making sure we can put roofs over people's heads. That's something that should be inherently conservative. And we'll be looking to her this week to get some delivery on that, really.
We've had two policy announcements so far today. On tuition fees, a raising of the threshold at which graduates in England will start to repay their debts. And there's an expansion of the Help to Buy scheme. The ambition of ministers here is to counteract claims by Labour that the Tories have abandoned younger voters and those struggling to make ends meet at a time of stagnating living standards. It's an ambition that's all too familiar to David Skelton, who founded a groundbreaking think tank in 2013.
I founded an organisation called Renewal, which is about how the Tory party can broaden its appeal to working class voters, younger voters, people from outside the southeast of England and ethnic minorities.
David Skelton says there's an urgent need for the government to accept that at times the state has to intervene, not just tinker at the edges.
They're looking at the right issues, but what I would say is the Conservatives have power. They've got the power to change things. All Labour has at the moment is words. So they should be using that power for kind of bold, radical changes to society and the economy. I'll give you a few examples. Housing. There is a clear shortage of housing. There are solutions which deal with the demand side, Help to Buy, for example. That's kind of all well and good, but the issue is with supply. There aren't enough houses being built. We need to increase the supply of houses. And frankly, the market has failed to do that. There is a role for the state, a role for government, to build more houses, to build more affordable houses. And with that, you can make home ownership, which at the moment is just a pipe dream for a lot of people. You can have some kind of low-rent, affordable homes and a fast track to right to buy. But the government has to get involved to build more houses.
But can a government preoccupied by Brexit really find the headspace as well to implement a bold, radical agenda? Henry Newman, the director of the Eurosceptic think tank Open Europe.
I think if you speak to people around the country, what they want is the government to get on with delivering Brexit. And they see Brexit as part of the change they want across the country, but not all of the change they want across the country. They want wholesale change to the way that our immigration system works, but they also want better skills training for British workers. They want to have reform to welfare as much as they do see the access of migrants to British welfare restricted. I think they sort of see these issues actually in a more nuanced way than we often give the public credit for.
You've been inside government, you've worked, as you say, with Frances Maud, with Michael Gove, and we hear a lot about the threat from Jeremy Corbyn in the way that he has grasped the youth vote. How do you think the Conservative Party can bring more young people on board?
Well, I think, again, you shouldn't set out to specifically bring more young people on board. I think you're in danger then of looking crass. And actually what you need to do is have policies that work for everybody. And I think that what we saw at the most recent election was that many people were concerned about housing and student fees and so on, not because they were young necessarily, but parents were hearing their children's concerns, grandparents were worried about their family's concerns. So I don't think you set out to resolve a problem with youth or indeed with any other group within the electorate by specifically focusing on that group. Of course, you should listen to them and try to understand their concerns, but you need policies that work for the whole country.
Henry Newman finishing that little report that I did when I was wandering around the conference earlier. And Nikki and Tim, it's interesting, this whole debate about the free market and capitalism, because there seem to have been some mixed messages on the free market coming from Theresa May and the leadership in recent months. And you heard David Skelton saying clearly there, look, maybe there is a time to accept that the state has to intervene. Why not say there'll be a big state-funded house building problem, a house building programme to get around this problem of lack of availability of housing? What do you think of that, Nikki Morgan?
Well, I think it's interesting. I agree with what David said. There is an issue about supply. And I found I was debating exactly this in my constituency only in the last couple of days. You know, we've got land that's been set aside, that's got plan permission on it, and yet it is not being built on. That's really frustrating for people who want the houses, for local residents who have reluctantly accepted that land is going to be developed, and that may not be what they had expected. And I do think there is an appetite. And I think Theresa May was onto something when she said there is some good that government can do. I'm also a great fan of the Reagan slogan, which is, the seven most terrifying words? I'm from the government and I'm here to help. So I think that there is a conservative. There is a real difference between what we're saying about entrepreneurship, enterprise, how wealth is created, how you spread wealth throughout society, than clearly what the Labour Party and the sort of Marxist McDonnell was saying last week. But I think there's an appetite for government to do more, but to do more the right way.
A state-funded building programme.
Well, whether it's state funded or whether there's a cleverer way perhaps of doing it where the state is able to provide a nudge that then actually, because there's a complicated thing here. It's not, obviously it's about building, but also, for example, how do we make sure that the developers are building or the state is building the right houses? We need more bungalows. Why are they not being built? How do we encourage people to think about moving on in life? There's all sorts of things like that.
Tim Lawton, I was flicking through this document. You might remember it. It's the Forward Together, Our Plan for a Stronger Britain. The Conservative Party manifesto. We do not believe in untrammelled free markets, it said. We reject the cult of selfish individualism. But Theresa May last week was saying free markets good, you know, don't be down on capitalism. So what do you think is the message? And do you think that there is a point where you accept that the state should intervene to help on issues like this?
I have absolutely no problem with that. And I think we've moved on from the public bad, private good, or vice versa argument. And when you take something like housing, it's one of the biggest challenges I think we have today about creating more supply, about getting more people on the first rung of the housing ladder. And I think that was something that happened very successfully under Mrs. Thatcher. It gave people a stake in society, whether they bought their house new or they bought their council house. It gave them a stake in society, which many people didn't have before that.
So and you'd like something radical and bold to be announced this week. Do you think you'll get it?
I would like a whole range of radical and bold, which can be certainly energised by the state, seed funded and funded in various forms by the state. And the big house building programmes in the past, under Conservative, in fact more so than Labour governments, have been national building programmes. There's lots of things we can do.
Do you think you'll get that this week?
No, but there's actually a lot of discussion going on within the Conservative Party at the moment, and the Chancellor specifically asked for ideas from backbenchers and others around the whole housing issue. We still have 750,000 empty properties in this country. We need far better shared equity schemes, particularly for young first-time house owners, to just get on that rung and feel some sort of ownership and stake in local society. We also need a sort of rent guarantee scheme, because far too many council tenants could rent in the private sector, but because they may be on housing benefit, they're instantly excluded because they can't put up the rent in advance. Money is quite cheap at the moment for local authorities to borrow. We should be coming up with much more sensible proposals like that, and I think we need new towns as well. We're trying to infill bits here and there, and in parts of the southeast where my constituency is, we are pretty thin on the ground for remaining infill bits. I think we've got to have new towns, whole new communities, and let people have a stake in it. Remember Mrs. Thatcher's great slogan in 1979. I have the poster above my desk at home. Don't just hope for a better future, vote for one. We need to be far more aspirational, and that's why we went wrong for once in the election, because we are the party of aspiration.
Mm. Aisha, the successive governments have failed to build enough housing. Labour government, Conservative government, whatever. We have this call now for more to be done to help the young through housing. A review of tuition fees, a raising of the threshold at which students in England would pay back their debt. Is this a sign, do you think, that the Tories are waking up to the threat of Jeremy Corbyn? I mean, you took long enough to come around to the appeal of him
and his way of doing things. Now I have consumed a lot of humble pie. And I face planted myself in humble pie. It's quite Moorish, actually, once you get into it. It's really quite nice. But what you cannot deny is that Corbyn has tapped into this huge enthusiasm with young people. Now, some people say it's just because of the tuition fees. Actually, it's not. A lot of young people I know that I spoke to, it's the bigger picture. It's the holistic offer of positivity and hope. So what Theresa May is up against is a very primary colour message from Corbyn, which is hope and aspiration and a sort of better future. She is tinkering around with tiny, teeny, teeny, tiny offers. Her big offer to students going, guess what, guys? I'm going to cap your student fees at, guess what, just over $9,000. You're welcome. You're welcome. Whereas Corbyn's saying, I'm going to scrap them. Now, you can have an argument about how viable that is. But in terms of getting cut through, all of the stuff she's doing is very piecemeal. It's like a Band-Aid over an axe wound in terms of her hemorrhaging support with the young people.
But Jeremy Corbyn's going to be found out, and he is being found out. Last week, they spent £312 billion. That is debt that the young people of this country are going to be saddled with, paying the interest
in over £7 billion a year. When you've got nurses and teachers who have effectively had a pay cut in real terms doing the right thing, people are fed up of the status quo.
Which is why I think we need to take away the pay cap. But at the end of the day, you can only pay for public services by creating the wealth to do it.
Or finding money for the DUP.
Otherwise, you just saddle future generations with debt, and our young people won't thank us for it.
And Nicky Morgan, in 10 seconds, I mean, do you think that you'll be able to grab something that will grab the headlines and attract young people back? The people who maybe voted Labour last time, or even the older generation who thought Jeremy Corbyn was the answer and not Theresa May?
I think the answer is yes, because I think that the millennials are actually wired differently. They're responsible, they understand that, you know, jobs and everything else. But I think Aisha is right, which is actually it's not just about specific policies, it's about values. Mm. And I think young people can smell phonies, and actually that's what we need to rethink ourselves.
Stop smelling like phonies. Great message. Right, now then, Sam Coates, what have we got on the front pages?
So across the front pages, there are basically just two stories, including one that we really haven't talked about that much this evening, which is the unprecedented day of violence in Spain's history. 850 people hurt, three seriously, soldiers firing rubber bullets, a protester lost their eye. That's on the front page of The Times, the front page of The Guardian. The Daily Telegraph also has it on their front with a very particular spin on it. They think it's an EU crisis. Their intro of their story, the EU was plunged into a new crisis last night after hundreds of people were injured. I think The Times takes a slightly different take. They point out that lots of EU diplomats are privately critical, putting the EU spin on it there, of course, plunging it back into the domestic debate. The second story on the front page is the lesser story, it has to be said, because the Johnson's announcement isn't very good, as you'll find out in 1 hour and 3 minutes, is the Conservative Party conference. And there you've got The Times, The Guardian, The Independent, all with stories of one form or the other about Boris, in particular these very stark comments from the British Chambers of Commerce that have been sent out overnight. He said that Boris Johnson is showing that there is division and disorganisation at the heart of the party of government. The comments from the business groups, public and private, have been eye-watering, but it will be the Daily Mail, as it so often is, that worries Downing Street the most. What a time to be squabbling is their banner headline as a vital Tory conference begins. They're all rowing about Boris. And it doesn't look to me, from the way that the Daily Mail have presented their front page, like they're desperately impressed.
Well, in 10 seconds, and I mean it, each of you, Nikki and Tim, a final word.
Well, I think, look, who knows what's going to happen this week. I'd like to think there are going to be lots of really exciting announcements. I have a feeling we're going to spend the next few days and nights debating, leadership.
Tim.
Toe the line, be loyal. We are the party of government. We have a responsibility and a duty to the country. So can everybody else shut up and let's get on with the job.
Jeremy Corbyn and Labour will be rubbing their hands in glee watching all the squabbling.
Ayesha Hazarika, Tim Lawton, Nicky Morgan and Sam Coates. That's all we have time for this evening. We will be back in our regular studio at Westminster next Sunday as MPs reassemble after the parliamentary recess. Do join us at the usual time. Until then, from all of us, good night.
You can download many more BBC Radio 4 programmes for free. Find these at bbc.co.uk/radio4.